What's purple and green and a classic Batman villain?
Barney?
Pretty close, because this week we're talking about the Riddler, because your geek history lesson on the Riddler is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I'm Jason, is that my name, Inman? Welcome to your Mind University, because Geek History Lesson is the podcast where one character, construct, team, or Batman villain is taken apart in 1 hour and we tell you every single thing that you need to know about them. And today, the lesson is on who, Ashley?
It is on the Riddler. You know him, you know his question marks, and he's actually a requested lesson. So I want to shout out our TAs.
That's so cool.
I love it
whenever we have an episode that is requested.
These are like old school first semester of Geek History Lesson requests.
Wow.
Like, he's been requested for a while. So thank you so much to Patrick McMillan and Josh Pinto for asking that we talk about the Riddler.
Wow.
And you know what?
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. They're both old school fans. And mm-hmm. if you are an old school Mind University fan, if you are a new school Mind University fan, and you want to bring some Geek History Lesson flair into your life, we have some really amazing enamel pins that you can go and pick up at geekhistorylesson.com.
This is very exciting. This is something that Ashley and I have been talking about for a long time. We've been talking about how do we make a pin for Geek History Lesson, you know, because this school, you like want to wear a school pin, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to do that thing, put the thing on your jacket, put it on your backpack. Well, we finally have it. We finally figured it out. We worked with a very nice company. So we have Geek History Lesson pins. They're about an inch wide. They're made of like soft nickel. And I think the design is, it's our new logo. It looks really cool. There's only 50 of them right now. So we printed a small order because we weren't sure, you know, how many people really wanted them. But if you want a Geek History Lesson pin, like Ashley said, go to geekhistorylesson.com, and in the menu there is a little thing that says GHL pin. It'll take you right there, because we're selling them on Etsy, because we don't know how internet stores work.
Yes, and please get them, and if you wear them to San Diego Comic-Con, please take a picture with Jason and I.
Oh yes, if you are going to be at San Diego Comic-Con this year, and make sure you get yourself one of those pins. And, you know, yeah, we definitely want a selfie with you.
For sure.
So geekhistorylesson.com, go get yourself a really, really cool Geek History Lesson pin. I think it's cool.
We're super proud of them.
Yeah. I'm going to wear like 17 of them.
Cool. So I'm down.
Now there's only 30 left.
All right. Let's roll right into the 10-cent origin. How about that?
The 10-cent origin, Ashley, in case you don't know.
I might not.
Well, you announced that we have a new university, so who knows? I don't know.
Well, we have a new semester coming up. We just ended our spring semester. We're into the summer now.
The 10-cent origin is the first section of our podcast where we're going to give you the Cliff Notes version, the basic details of everything you need to know about Edward Nygma, the Riddler, just in case you're going to a Batman-themed cocktail party and you want to show off to those ladies in the question mark dress.
I've seen some cool lady Riddler costumes in my time.
That's good.
I have. So the 10-cent origin is that the Riddler is, of course, a DC Comics character, traditionally a Batman villain. His alias is Edward Nygma, and he sometimes goes by the Riddler, E-Nygma, Nygma but with a Y instead of an I, Edward Eddie Nashton, and Eddie Nash. And he was created by Classic Comics creators Bill Finger and Dick Sprang, and first appeared in Detective Comics number 140 from October of 1948. He is an old man. And his team affiliations have been the Secret Society of Supervillains, Injustice League, the Legion of Doom, and the Secret Six. His abilities include a genius-level intellect, a criminal mastermind, and the use of complex puzzles and riddles, which is apparently now a superpower.
The use of complex puzzles.
Yes. Arguable, I would say.
So anyone that solved a Rubik's Cube, you now have a superpower.
I would say so. I've never solved a Rubik's Cube.
Neither have I.
And he has famously been portrayed by Frank Gorshin in the Batman 66 movie, Jim Carrey in another movie, and he is currently appearing on Gotham, played by Corey Michael Smith.
I also believe and I might be wrong on this, I believe Sean Astin's father also played him on the Batman 66 series. I believe there was two Riddlers.
That's possible.
Yes.
I don't know.
I'm going to call that right now. I'm pretty certain Gomez Adams from the Adams family was also the Riddler.
Aw, bless Gomez.
I'm very certain there were a couple episodes that Frank Gorshin couldn't do.
Now that you're saying that sounds right, but it's not in my notes.
Sure, it's whatever.
So I can either confirm nor deny.
I'm confirming it right now, even if it's false.
I'm also going to really recommend that people stick around to the end of the episode, we have a discussion with a pretty cool Batman creator.
Oh, I think we can go ahead and tease who it is.
All right. We have Mr. Tom King, who is currently writing Batman and is in the middle of the War of Jokes and Riddles arc and knows a little thing or two about the Riddler, joining us to talk toward the end of the episode. So please stick around and listen to that.
I'm pretty excited about that because we've never had a current Bat writer talking about a Bat character that he's writing literally right now.
Yes. Hopefully more of that. Now let's move on to the meet cute.
The meet cute is where we reveal where Ashley and I first encountered these characters. It's a term that we stole from romantic comedies. Ashley, where did you first meeted and cuted the Riddler?
Guess what? It's not Batman the Animated Series.
Okay, I'm good, because that's usually your common answer. Batman the Animated Series.
I mean, it was tough. It came into my life when I was really young, and it was my first exposure to a lot of Batman.
And that's totally fine.
It's actually Batman 66, the original Batman TV show.
Oh, Frank Gorshin.
Yes, because it was on in reruns before Batman the Animated Series got to Canada. So that was my introduction to Riddler, and I always thought he was a really cool villain.
Like, even in the unflattering tights?
Totally, totally. I don't know. I thought the riddles as a child were a really neat hook. I don't know necessarily as an adult if I agree with that, but we'll get into that a little bit later. So yeah, Frank Gorshin was my very first Riddler.
Nice.
How about you? Where did you first meet Mr. Edward Nygma?
Well, as I've revealed on this podcast several times before, Walmart used to be a big outlet for me for picking up comic books. And sometimes in Walmarts, they would have these 10 packs of just random DC comic books that you could buy for like $5. So I would buy those, you know, and you would never know what you were going to get. One of the issues that I got in one of these packs was an issue of Batman. I don't remember the issue number, but it was during the Nightfall crossover. Mm. And there is a cover where this super roided out Riddler is like holding Batman over a building or punching him into a clock or something like that. I remember being like, who the hell is this guy? And the whole issue is very 90s-ish, of course, comics, but Riddler gets injected with venom, you know, the venom from Bane, which makes you big and strong and stuff like that. And so, like, Riddler spends the entire, like, issue, like, being roided out and trying to fist punch Batman in the face.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
And then the story is about, like, Riddler submits his riddles, of course, to Commissioner Gordon, and they're both like, wow, these are pretty easy to solve. He's usually a lot better than this. So the venom's like making him stupid.
Making him dumb. That's funny.
But that was my first Riddler. So that was the first time I ever encountered the Riddler. And then, of course, see, for me, a big Riddler thing was, of course, Batman Forever.
Yes.
I don't like that version of the Riddler because he's very manic and crazy, but his first costume's an interesting look.
I think that's one of the costumes that really works from that incarnation of Batman.
Yeah, with the little derby hat and the
You need the bowler hat.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It is a requisite of Riddler. I almost said Joker, of the Riddler.
Of
the Joker.
All right, cool. So let's move into History 101, which is the main meat of our lesson, where Professor Ashley's going to sit you all down and give you a little lesson.
A little learning
about the Riddler.
All right, so I'm going to say straight up before I start that Riddler in the Golden Age, the Silver Age, and the Bronze Age pretty much doesn't change. He breaks into either a museum or a jewelry store or a rich person's house, steals their things and or kidnaps them, leaves a riddle either spray-painted painted aside of a building, or mailed to Batman and or Commissioner Gordon. They solve it. They save the day. It's not really until the modern age, until, you know, late 80s, early 90s, where he gets some dynamic character beats.
And we've encountered this before with other Batman villains.
So what I've done is I've put all of his stories in more or less a chronological fictional history.
Uh-huh.
So we're not going to talk a lot about the Golden and Silver Age stuff. It's worth checking out if you're a big Riddler person, if you're a big Batman person. But most of what we're talking about happens post-1985.
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yes, so that we can get some dynamic storytelling.
All right, cool.
All right, so Riddler's origin begins with a man whose name is Edward Nygma, or Edward Nashton in some of the later writers, and he becomes fascinated with puzzles as a young age. And this happens because a teacher, when he's in school, elementary school, announces that a contest will be held, and whoever can solve a puzzle the fastest will win a prize. So little Edward sets his sights on winning this, and he wants glory and satisfaction and all of those things that lead you to eventually becoming Batman's supervillain. He is physically abused at the same time by his father, who is jealous of his son's intellectual prowess and that this little boy can understand concepts that are beyond his ken. So his father believed that Edward had cheated him out of his own achievements and ruined his life, and so he physically assaulted him as punishment. And these memories are actually suppressed for a lot of his adult life, but keep them in mind because they're going to come up later.
Got it.
Edward sneaks into the school one night in order to practice. He takes the puzzle out of his teacher's desk, and he tries it over and over and over and over and over again until he's able to solve it in under 1 minute, which is pretty impressive. So, as you might imagine, he wins the contest and is given a book about riddles as a prize. And his cheating rewarded, he embraces his mastery of puzzles of all kinds, eventually turning to a life of crime via becoming a carnival employee who excelled at cheating his customers out of their money with his bizarre puzzles and mind games. So,
let's talk about this for a second.
Not a dissimilar origin to Mr. Dick Grayson.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it's interesting because you said the Riddler was 1940, 41?
48.
48. Okay, so he is a product of the 40s. Dick Grayson was 40.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that I guess it must have just been a thing of the times.
In the zeitgeist,
carnivals were just the thing. Like, you would see, like, the carnival would come around and they travel in Barnum and Bailey's Circus and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Because they aren't really that common anymore.
Hardly at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they evolved into, I guess, state fairs? I don't know.
Sort of. I think state fairs were still around back then.
But yeah, there's nothing really like this besides Cirque du Soleil, which is a far cry from what we're talking about here.
Like, yeah, I don't know, like, if you were to update, like, say the Riddler was, like, invented in, like, you know, 2000, where like, would he be the guy that does the cup trick on the streets of New York? Like, where's the ball? Like, would he be that guy?
Yeah, yeah. Or would he be, like a guy in Vegas?
Or I'll guess your weight guy? Yeah, a guy in Vegas is probably a good idea.
Yeah, like, but off the strip.
Yes, exactly.
Off the old strip. Mm-hmm. So he soon finds himself longing for greater challenges and thrills. And so he dons the disguise of the Riddler and names himself the Riddler to challenge Batman, believing that Batman is the only worthy adversary in Gotham City. And in his first encounter with the dynamic duo, he tried to confound them with his infamous double entry riddle clues, which is a staple of the Golden Age. It's basically a this or that riddle.
Oh, okay. I was just about to ask you. I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yes. And then
the Riddler's already beat me.
I'm not very good at riddles.
I am not good at riddles either.
And then he tried to kill them with a booby-trapped glass maze on a pier, only to have Batman and Robin escape and the Riddler vanishes, leaving his trademark question mark behind. So that's your classic Riddler story.
Where do you get the money for a glass maze?
That's an interesting question during the origin of the Riddler.
Yeah.
But later on,
he's a carnival worker.
Yeah. Later on, he is said to have amassed a great fortune, which leads him to be able to do some of these more fantastical things. But if he's this kid from not a great family that beat the snot out of him and then worked at a carnival, like, a giant glass cage might have been a bit of an undertaking.
Yep. A little expensive.
Maybe he built it. I don't know. He's like super smart. So now we're going to do a giant time jump all the way up to 1996.
Wow, to 96?
With Batman the Long Halloween by Jeff Loeb and Tim
Sale. Oh, so we're not doing a continuity jump. We're just doing a, got it.
Because we talked about his Golden Age origin, and now just, we're sort of moving forward from here.
Got it.
So the Riddler is strictly an informant for the crime boss Carmine Falcone during the Long Halloween,
mm-hmm.
Who is working to learn who the holiday killer really is. Now, if you've never read Batman the Long Halloween, the holiday killer it does exactly what his name would suggest. He kills people on holidays throughout the year. And in many ways, his goal is the same as Batman's throughout the Long Halloween, although with a less kind endgame. So they want to find the holiday killer and murderize him, and Batman wants to find him and interrogate him and then put him in jail. This is the beginning of Batman and Riddler often working toward the same goal. And he's eventually forced out and no longer allowed to work for Carmine Falcone by his daughter, Sophia Falcone, who's like the giant lady that you see in all of the art, at the order of her father, although he's promptly attacked by Holiday on his way out on April Fool's Day, but manages to escape with his life, being one of the only victims of a Holiday killer attack to not be killed. Riddler appears again during the chapter where Two-Face is born, You see a version of Harvey Dent's origin in the story, and he's forced to give Batman all the information that he has on the attack as one of the only witnesses.
Yeah.
Loeb and Sale then give him a bigger role in their next story, Batman Dark Victory, which, fun fact, is my favorite Dick Grayson origin story.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And so there's a bunch of hangman games that have been left at the scenes of crimes, and that's okay. One of the big mysteries of these stories. And Batman consults with the Riddler about these because he knows games and he knows puzzles, so who else would be better to go and ask for some helpful advice.
Yeah.
And then he also appears on the jury at the hangman's trial later on in the story that's being held by a bunch of villains and kind of recalls the scene from The Dark Knight Rises, if you're looking for something to compare that to. Loeb and Sale.
The kangaroo court you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
Yes, that's what you call that, mm-hmm. Kangaroo Court. Loeb and Sale then finish off their Riddler trilogy by including him in Catwoman When in Rome, and he accompanies Selina Kyle in her tour of Italy under the pretense that he's looking to discover his fellow bad guy's origin. This is, I think, kind of a fun story because she calls him Eddie, and it's a very watered-down version of the classic Riddler. You get to see him really more as a person than as a villain for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's able to manipulate Selina into believing that some of the worst rogues in Batman's rogues gallery are after her. But everyone that's attacking her throughout the story is actually in his employ because his true goal is to learn Batman's civilian identity from Selina, although he's ultimately shocked to learn that she doesn't know and she doesn't care.
Well, yeah, she doesn't know at that time anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whether or not Selina knows Batman, Bruce Wayne's true identity kind of fluctuates in continuity per what the writers want to do.
Oh, see, that's interesting because I've always thought that she did not know it until Batman Hush.
Oh, really?
And that's kind of the official continuity.
It is.
You know, they,
but that's assuming that it's a straight timeline, which...
That's true.
You know, arguable.
And it's very much not. But, yeah, I've always, like, in continuity, like, pre-Batman Hush, she doesn't know it. Post-Batman Hush, she knows exactly who he is.
Yes. But sometimes we go back and tell origin stories, and she doesn't always know the origin story. So the Riddler is awesomely a pretty significant part of the Question miniseries, where he's...
Denny O'Neill.
Yes, where he is he's riding on a bus, and he's sitting next to a prostitute. And she convinces him that he should become, quote, a big-time villain. And, you know, she's a pretty nice prostitute, so he decides to take her advice.
Okay.
And his solution is to hijack the bus that they're on.
Oh, that makes sense.
And torture everybody by asking them riddles.
Including the nice lady prostitute?
Yes.
Oh.
She's just a lady trying to get some money.
Yeah, Eddie, what are you doing here?
And if they can't answer his riddles correctly, he will either rob them or kill them, or sometimes both.
Okay, that's interesting, because the Riddler is generally not a murderer.
Yeah. But he is, I guess, for the sake of the question.
Well, the question was very, if you don't know who the question is, he's a detective. He wears a blue trench coat, blue fedora. He has this mask that, like, he makes his face look flat.
Yes.
He's in Justice League Unlimited. He's the one that uncovers, like, the Cadmus arc or whatever. And he's a hard-boiled detective. He's, like, more of a real world, doesn't have superpowers. He's just the dude that punches you in the face and tries to figure out your
deal. Which I think is a good character to put a murdering Riddler up against.
Sure,
you know?
Sure, yeah, 100%.
Like, if you're going to tell that story, the question is a good place to check it out.
I agree.
The question, of course, defeats the Riddler by asking him philosophical riddles and breaking him emotionally, although he is allowed to go free when he answers the final riddle correctly. Now, breaking the Riddler by asking him to go through an existential crisis will happen again. So he's very easily mentally broken for a dude who's as smart as he is. He next appears in the one-shot Riddler at the Riddle Factory by Matt Wagner with art by Dave Taylor. It's really good. I would definitely recommend checking it out.
Anything by Matt Wagner is really good.
True. Definitely true.
That guy has never let me down.
I think it has a really interesting hook. So, the Riddler becomes the host of an underground game show that focuses around blackmailing celebrities. Now, this comes ahead of the TMZ curve, but you could definitely see a trend there if you wanted to. And eventually drives most of these people to committing suicide because of the stuff that he uncovers about them. And it's eventually implied that maybe instead of inspiring their suicide, he's dropping them off buildings or into vats of acid. Like, he's more murdery in this story as well.
Okay, we got another murdery Riddler here.
Yes. The game show is revealed to be a ruse meant to distract Scarface, whom Riddler is stealing from at the time.
Now, is this the Scarface who is the ventriloquist or the Scarface that is just a Scarface?
The Scarface that is the ventriloquist.
Oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. Yeah, so Scarface, if you don't know, he's the little puppet that this... I can't remember the guy's name, but like he's this other guy who is called the ventriloquist who holds Scarface.
Yes.
And he's like this weird crime boss. And of course, he speaks with a lisp.
It's very strange. But I really like the game show idea. I think it's an interesting way to incorporate some of the carnival aspects without necessarily having to have a guy like yelling at a bunch of people walking by.
Yeah.
You could update that for YouTube now in a contemporary storyline really easily. Then Riddler crops up in The Primal Riddle, which is written by Steve Englehart with art by Dusty Abel, I'm really sorry. This is part of the Legends of the Dark Knight series of stories, which are all pretty good, where he's working on his greatest death trap, quote unquote. And it goes something like this. Now, Jason, I want you to tell me if you think this is the greatest death trap.
I will judge it.
Throw Batman into a pit lined with electrical wire and slowly fill it with water. The only thing protecting Batman from being electrocuted are some bumpers like you put in a bowling alley that won't last for very long or he'll die. Good ultimate death trap or not?
Doesn't really seem that ultimate.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe throw some sharks in there. Where's the sharks?
Or some snakes?
Or some lasers?
How about some lasers in the top? A little Bond villain there?
Yeah, this kind of seems like not the ultimate death trap. It kind of seems like the Home Depot all I could afford death trap.
Oh, man, that's so rude.
I mean, I could make that death trap for $10. Come on. Home Depot. Not a sponsor.
If they would like to be, they can contact us. Spoiler, Batman doesn't die. It's not that great.
Well, of course. It's $10 of electrical wire and a tub.
And a tub. I like to think that he at least dug the hole in the ground and maybe lined it with a tarp or something.
Okay, so he spent $15 on it with the tarp and the shovel.
A tarp is $15? No. right after this, Riddler does eventually develop a working relationship with the Clue Master, a.k.a. Arthur Brown, who is totally a low-rent Riddler, who looks like a low-rent Oliver Queen and is also Stephanie Brown's dad.
I was going to say, like, you know who his daughter is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And even gives him a bomb to help him destroy Batman in one storyline.
Hey, buddy, here's a bomb.
Yeah,
remember, Batman can't get rid of him.
A bomb. Oh, Adam West, rest in peace. Fun fact, Riddler doesn't initially like the Clue Master because he ripped off his shtick.
Of course.
And literally, like, every time people talk about the Clue Master, like, he's just low rent.
Yeah.
Less interesting Riddler.
Not a smart Riddler.
And that's why he goes away forever and ever. Now, during this time, Harley Quinn is trying to define herself in Gotham separate from the Joker. So she's having a lot of her own solo adventures for the first time.
Oh, cool.
And she and Riddler find themselves at odds over who should be in control of Wayne Manor, because they both know that there's something there, and they both know that Bruce Wayne is really rich, so that they think that they should have it. They end up in a huge fight, a big battle of fisticuffs between them and all their hench people, that ends with the Riddler captured by Harley Quinn's good buddy at the time, Big Barda. You know, that classic duo.
I have never read that story.
It's fine.
All right. I don't want to read it.
Yeah. During this entire storyline, the Riddler is trying to solve the mystery of Wayne Manor, which he says over and over and over and
the
over
again. The mystery of Wayne Manor.
Yes. And succeeds in opening the door to the Batcave after extensive damage has been done to the building, ultimately solving the riddle. So he knows what the mystery of Wayne Manor is now.
Do you know, and if you don't know, it's fine, is this around Cataclysm time, like the earthquake?
It's a little bit before that.
Okay, okay.
But yes. Then came the time when Wonder Woman's lasso of truth was broken. And do you know what it means when that happens? It means that the DC Universe's laws of truth are also broken. But what does this mean for the Riddler? Well, I'm so glad that everybody out in podcast land asked. It means that Batman can't solve his riddles, which you would think is a good thing.
Okay.
But it also means that he can't solve his own riddles, and this is very bad.
So he forgets, like, where he laid the booby traps and stuff like that. Okay.
And this is during the time when Riddler's a pretty low-rent villain, because Flash actually makes a crack about how bad things have gotten if Batman can't solve the Riddler's riddles. Really hard to say. Many fans have taken this to reflect Riddler's poor reputation among the rogues, although that will get rehabbed in a couple more storylines.
Mm-hmm.
This also marks his attack on other heroes besides Batman. You get to see, I guess, the Riddler's rogues gallery or heroes gallery, building out a little bit. Most notably, he has a rivalry with Green Arrow.
Yes, he does.
Which is really cool and could have interesting potentials for the TV show, although I think it is unlikely.
That is during the Judd Winnick run on Green Arrow, which I think is one of the best runs on Green Arrow. And Riddler, yeah, he goes to Star City and he basically takes, I think it's a football stadium.
I'm going to get there.
Okay, sorry.
Please chime in.
All right, yeah.
So the Riddler hates Green Arrow, especially because of their conflict during No Man's Land. Remember we talked about Cataclysm a little bit earlier?
Yep. No Man's Land. Are you going to explain about No Man's Land or you want me to?
Please go ahead.
No Man's Land is where the Gotham City gets screwed up by an earthquake and the United States government does the most logical thing that any government would do. They blow all the bridges and say like, hey, all the people in there, we're not going to give you federal aid.
Basically, yes.
And it's
it
like
becomes a gangland.
Yeah, it becomes like a Mad Max kind of place.
Yes. So Oliver and Riddler are at conflict during this because Oliver is directly responsible for Riddler's defeat. So he hates him. He winds up gravely injuring both Green Arrow and Arsenal. Which is surprisingly badass for the Riddler, I have to say, because Green Arrow and Arsenal are pretty capable street-level heroes. And he's able to escape before the Outsiders are able to capture him, although they do spend a couple issues chasing him. Next, he's hired to steal a bunch of mystical artifacts from a series of Star City museums, harkening back to his Golden Age origin. Remember, he just steals a bunch of expensive stuff. And he succeeds and he succeeds in sending Team Arrow all over the city to disarm an atomic bomb that he's housed in the Star City Rockets Stadium, which is the local football
team. Yes, and by the way, there are some amazing covers for these issues. Like, there is one of them where it's like the Riddler leaning against the wall and in the background is an atomic explosion, and the atomic explosion is in the shape of a question mark.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really cool. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's, I'm going to try to remember to share that. Riddler then plunges Star City into darkness, cuts out all the lights.
Yep.
Using the aforementioned mystical artifacts, which allows Arrow to capture him, because I guess Oliver sees better in the dark than Edward does.
No, it's
and foil his evil plans.
It's because what happens, and it's a very interesting part of the story, is that because all the technology is gone, it becomes this Dark Knight Return situation where Oliver teaches the citizens of Star City to use a bow and arrow.
Oh, that's cool.
And so he activates all the citizens of Star City and they all attack the Riddler's army.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So there you go. Check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about Batman Hush. Jason, what is Batman Hush?
Batman Hush is, I don't know if it's one of the most revered Batman stories, but it's definitely one of the most popular.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Loeb, Jim Lee, is when Jim Lee came back to DC. And it is a mystery where Batman is being befuddled by a villain named Hush, and all of his rogues gallery shows up. And then some major significant events happen in the story. Like I told you, like Batman revealing his identity to Catwoman and stuff like that. It's a fun story, and it's a great story to give to somebody who's never read Batman before.
Definitely. And the villain Hush that Jason talked about is revealed to be Tommy Elliott, who is a childhood friend of Bruce Wayne.
Previously didn't exist.
Not existing.
Yeah, he was created for that story.
Yes. So Riddler is such an integral part of Hush that he makes it onto a bunch of the covers, which are really cool. And that's a pretty important piece of development for him because he hasn't been on a ton of Batman covers like on his own. He's always sort of crouching in the background. Or something like
that.
But
are we gonna mention the most important Riddler thing in Hush, though, right?
Well, we're going to go into the entire story.
Oh, great. Okay, sorry.
So right near the beginning.
I'm sorry, Professor. Give me bad marks.
No, you're just, I'll give you A for enthusiasm. How about that? So there's a pretty important development right at the beginning where we learn that he's suffering from cancer. And
oh, I forgot about this.
So did I.
I forgot about
that. And
then
I read Hush again. So this is something that I think could have been really interesting to explore more, but he cures it pretty quickly by jumping into a Lazarus pit.
Oh, that's right, because he steals a Lazarus pit from Ra's al Ghul.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Tommy Elliot, who is the villain Hush, he tries to convince Tommy Elliot to pay him to use the Lazarus pit to cure his mother's cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But Tommy wanted her fortune and says, screw you, man. So Riddler winds up teaming up with Hush a little later in order to get revenge on Batman and Killer Croc. And so their team consists of Ra's al Ghul, Talia al Ghul, Lady Shiva, Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, Joker, Clayface, and Scarecrow, all sort of at different times throughout the storyline as it demands. So yeah, like Jason said, most of the rogues show up in the story.
Because Hush and Riddler like sent out invites, right?
To, yes.
Like, they're like, let's make Batman's life terrible.
Yes. And that leads to like the scene in the opera house and stuff like that. To take down Batman. So yes, this version of the Riddler also knows that Bruce Wayne and Batman are one and the same. And this happened because he had a psychotic break that opened up his mind to this possibility. And he also deduced that Jason Todd was a former Robin.
Yep.
Now, the Hush storyline is pretty famous for being the first return of Jason Todd and the introduction of him as the Red Hood, even though it's this hallucination that they eventually use against Batman. And the reveal circles almost entirely around the Riddler, who shares this information with Hush to use against Batman and facilitates Clayface taking the shape of Jason Todd as he appears on panel to basically break Batman's psyche.
One of the greatest last page reveals, I think, in comic book history is where you see Hush pull off his mask and it's Jason Todd.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what the hell? Now, of course, Under the Red Hood retconned that later, saying that when you saw when you saw his face, it was actually Jason Todd.
Because Jason Todd is alive at this time.
Because Batman gets into a fight and they get into a fight and then Jason Todd goes around a corner and then they say when he goes around the corner or whatever, that's when Clayface takes over from him. Now, I'm not a big fan of that retcon.
I'm not either.
But what I've heard is that originally in that storyline, Jeff Loeb was going to reintroduce Jason Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard the editors at the time like were like, no. And they backed off on it and they made it Clayface.
Yeah, I heard that as well. Comics, it's great.
Yep.
I do personally feel like Hush is one of Riddler's best turns as a villain. And
it's one of his best stories.
It's really, this era sort of harkens his turn into being like a really dark and scary rogue again, as opposed to sort of a B or a C level stringer. He then threatens to reveal Batman's identity, and Batman says that if Riddler answers the question of who is Batman, then the question becomes meaningless, and that undercuts Riddler's entire existence as a villain.
Yep.
Batman also tells Riddler that by exposing his identity, it would help Ra's al Ghul figure out who borrowed his Lazarus Pit and probably contribute something to Riddler's and that probably contributes something to the Riddler's decision to keep Bruce Wayne's secret after all. Riddler, interesting enough, never reveals Bruce Wayne's identity.
It's such an interesting idea that the Riddler is able to figure out that Bruce Wayne is Batman. I think it's such a great story point. I think this little how we keep it under the hat is a little weak.
It's a little contrived. A little silver.
Yeah, yeah.
Riddler's involvement in the events of Hush has a lot of ramifications in the immediate aftermath, including Hush coming back to beat the living snot out of Riddler on a rooftop, which forces the Riddler to beg for protection from Penguin and the Joker. He gets the Joker to agree by promising to tell him who killed his pregnant wife, Jeannie. Though that doesn't last for very long, because Hush teams up with Prometheus, defeats the Joker, and Riddler is forced to go on the lam to avoid being killed. After that, he goes to Poison Ivy for protection, but she refuses him, and they fight fist to fist, with Poison Ivy ultimately winning. Following this, he becomes homeless and lives on the streets of Gotham City with his mind completely destroyed. And you would think that that might be the end of him, but no. He befriends an ex-NSA codebreaker, isn't that convenient, who is able to help him recover his intelligence and abilities. And it is during this restoration that he recovers the memory of the abuse that he suffered at the hands of his father from his childhood. Riddler realizes that this abuse is what brought him and brought about his fixation with riddles because of a desire to bring out the truth and prove himself innocent to his father's accusations of deception. In reaction to this new knowledge, Riddler spends much of the money that he had stolen over the years on plastic surgery and tattoos, notably covering his torso with a bunch of question marks and killing the codebreaker who had helped him. He then goes on a spree and steals an ancient scroll from Batman's possession just to prove that he can and not because he really wants to. Following this, Riddler alternates between criminal activity and schemes to legally acquire back his fortune. His intellect is notably higher from this point forward in publication history. Fun fact. The next time we see Riddler after this is in Infinite Crisis number 1 as part of a group of villains attacking the GCPD. Then he's spotted as part of the worldwide supervillain breakout facilitated by the Secret Society of Supervillains during Villains Unlimited : Infinite Crisis Special number 1. He is breaking out of Arkham Asylum prior to the supernatural disaster that's about to happen, and he crops up again during the Society's attack on Metropolis, but is taken out by Shining Knight, who awesomely hits him in the head with a mace. Now, dear listeners, if you want to keep Jason and I from getting hit in the head with a mace, you can head on over to patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. Show a little support our way and get some cool stuff in return, including our new Patreon-exclusive podcast, Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures, where we tell you stories from our personal lives that are not always geeky, but might include getting hit in the head with a mace.
I mean, I've never been hit in the head with a mace, so I can't guarantee that that will happen. So, but yeah, if you want a little bit more of a personal side to us, you want to know a little bit more about our lives like that. We talk about past experiences. We talk about what we're doing, just going on. It's a once a month podcast that you can only hear over at patreon.com/Jawin. And it's your support over there that helps keep this show alive, helps keep this show going for free. And we appreciate everybody that goes on over there and supports. And so if you feel like it too, head on over there.
Yes. So, post Mace to the Face, Paul Dini brings back the Riddler in his Detective Comics run and deals with what happened to his brain after this, because as you might imagine, it was a little addled. Riddler is in a coma for a year, and when he wakes up, he's no longer insane or obsessed with riddles, so, maybe it wasn't such a bad thing after all. Instead, he becomes a private consultant on murder cases to put his massive intellect and gigantic ego to good use.
He also, during this time, forgot Batman's identity.
Yes, we'll come back around to
okay,
that.
Okay. But this is a really, this is a really great Batman run, and Paul Dini does a really good job in this. And I actually like, this is one of my favorite versions of the Riddler.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's interesting. When he is hired to investigate the death of a wealthy socialite, he's given a photo of Bruce Wayne by the woman's father. And working on the case allows Riddler to remember his name, Edward Nigma, not just the Riddler, and to bring on suspicion that there is more to Bruce Wayne than meets the eye, although he doesn't quite yet remember that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's invited by Bruce Wayne to a yacht party, because that's fun. And when an old friend of Bruce's falls overboard, is devoured by sharks, Riddler claims to have solved the case by deducing that it was a successful suicide attempt. However, Batman discovers that foul play was involved, racing with the Riddler to catch the man responsible when Riddler is beat upside the head with a shark tooth club and Batman is pushed out a window. Riddler then winds up saving the day by wrapping his tie around an arrow, lighting it on fire, and shooting the killer in the back, refusing to put out the flames and leading to his death. Although Batman refuses to ally himself with Riddler, Bruce Wayne hires Edward Nigma to track down an experimental drug developed by Wayne Enterprises that was stolen by Lisa Newman, who was a lab assistant working on this project. Mm-hmm. And fun fact, this drug is for muscle stamina and cellular regeneration, so it's not quite superpowered, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. Riddler learns that Lisa Newman was staying at the Athenian Women's Help Shelter along with Harley Quinn, who encouraged her into a life of crime, and shares this information with Batman, earning Riddler his trust for a little while. Then he appears in Countdown number 42, where he tells Mary Marvel that he's on the straight and narrow and is working as a detective and really enjoying his new life. This information leads them to team up to defeat Clayface, where it is revealed that Mary is more vicious than anyone thought, and Edward tries to calm her down.
Yep, it's not a great storyline.
No, but I think it's interesting that they teamed him up with Mary Marvel at all, so I did want to mention it. Later, he's working on catching a serial killer who has been operating in Gotham, who's actually trying to get revenge on the Riddler. And it turns out that the murderer's girlfriend was killed in a gunfire battle between Riddler's gang and some security guards, and so he wants to kill Edward Nigma in recompense. Batman then shows up in the nick of time and saves Riddler. Next, we're going to talk about the miniseries Gotham City Underground from 2008, written by Frank Thierry with art by Jim Calafiore. Sorry. The Riddler's investigating what Penguin is up to, and he ends up saving Dick Grayson during the Gotham gang war between Penguin and Tobias White. And this leads to him deducing who Dick Grayson is, in fact, Nightwing. And from that, he's able to basically figure out who the entire rest of the Bat family
is. Well, it's because you can. Once you figure out one of them, you can figure out all of them.
Because they're all tied together in their personal lives as well. Riddler next crops up in Battle for the Cowl, The Underground, written by Chris Yost with art by Pablo Raimondi, where he's hired by Penguin to hunt down Black Mask and ends up tracking down Catwoman, Harley Quinn, and Poison Ivy in the process. This leads to his appearance in the Gotham City Siren series, which is amazing, where he is being controlled by Poison Ivy and being kept in a vegetative state, pun intended. so she can work out of his house because he's got this really cool house. He's later freed from Ivy's control when Bone Blaster shows up to kill Catwoman. But he's so mad that Bone Blaster ruined his house that he takes his question mark cane off the wall and savagely beats him upside the head. He's asked by Catwoman and Ivy to help them locate Harley Quinn because she's gone missing, but he refuses because he hates all of them. During this time, he's able to figure out that Dick Grayson has taken up the mantle of Batman, and they cautiously team up to prevent the murders of a series of young women and take out a villain named Conundrum, who's ultimately responsible for it. And then Batman is really the one who takes him down, but Riddler sort of helps facilitate that. This event forces Dick to admit that Edward Nygma is reforming after all, although he still needs to be watched. This doesn't last for very long, and Riddler pretty much goes back to being a villain from this point
pretty
forward.
Pretty quickly, yeah.
A storyline called Eye of the Beholder actually cements that when Dick Grayson slash Batman is ambushed by Riddler and Enigma. Now, Jason, do you know who Enigma is?
Is it the Riddler's daughter?
Yeah.
Okay, I sort of remember this really bad storyline.
All right, so that's all you have to know. The Enigma is the Riddler's daughter.
Yeah.
They're working for Gilda Dent to uncover a list of Jade Society members. Gilda is Harvey Dent's estranged wife.
Yep.
Gilda then hires Riddler and Enigma to help Two-Face defeat Mario Falcone and get his coin back because they've stolen his Two-Face coin.
Mm-hmm.
They're successful. Hooray. Riddler and Enigma part on bad terms when Riddler asks, what is green and purple and bleeds profusely, and then stabs her. Then the New 52 happens. Jason, what's the New 52 really quick?
Barry Allen missed his mommy, so he ran really back in time and screwed up the entire timeline, and when he tried to put all the pieces back together again, like Humpty Dumpty, it birthed the New 52.
Yes, and all of these come from the Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo Batman.
Yeah, and all the past stuff that we've just been talking about is basically not in continuity anymore.
Yes. Riddler is seen in Batman number one as an inmate in Arkham Asylum with a new costume and a silly mohawk. He is biding his time there and teasing the guards, with the Joker showing a lot of respect for him, upgrading his status among the Batman rogues gallery to a pretty scary villain. Joker goes on to use his gas to force Riddler to escape his cell and prove that he's smarter than everyone else thinks and he could have escaped all along. He also appears in Zero Hour with his surname now spelled NYGMA. Instead of N-I-G-M-A.
Do you mean Zero Year?
Oh, yeah, Zero Year. I'm so sorry. Yes, Zero Year. Yeah. I wrote Zero Year. I said Zero Hour. No, Zero Year.
We have run into that. Yeah. Zero Hour, Zero Year. No, this is Zero Year. Yes.
Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo. Zero Year. He also appears in Zero Year with his surname now changed, spelled N-Y-G-M-A. And he's Batman's first masked supervillain per this continuity, which I think is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
He beats Batman twice and is able to take control of Gotham, making it a wasteland where only the intelligent can survive. Although he's eventually defeated by Batman working together with Commissioner James Gordon, who we have a pretty great lesson on, and Lucius Fox, and is thrown in Arkham Asylum, where we then go back in continuity and meet him in Batman number one. And in DC Rebirth, he debuts in Batman number 19, written by Tom King, but that's pretty close to what's being published right now, so that's where this lesson is going to end.
Yay! So just the comic books, no other, we don't want to talk about Jim Carrey or anything like that?
I don't really think we do.
I mean, his leotard, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah, leotards and men don't mix.
All right, great. So let's move on into the next section of our podcast, the recommended reading section, where Ashley's going to make some suggestions if you want to read some Riddler stories. And you can find all these suggestions at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. All these choices will be up there. You can click on them. It'll take you right to Amazon so you can read them for yourself.
Yes. So definitely have to recommend Batman Hush.
Yep, great. Good choice.
Probably
it's a Riddler story.
Riddler's best turn as a Batman villain. I'm also going to recommend the first volume of Judd Winnick's Green Arrow run.
Okay.
Leading into that, because I think Riddler is really interesting when he's not facing Batman, and I think more of that would be good in this world. And then if you're looking for some more contemporary stuff, you got to pick up Zero Year, mm-hmm. and you get to see his origin with Batman, which I think is really, really nice.
Cool.
All right, now let's get ready to move into our discussion, where, like we said at the top, we have Mr. Tom King. And you may know his writing from such amazing things as Sheriff of Babylon, The Vision, Omega Men, and the current Batman DC Rebirth series. Let's welcome Tom King to the Geek History Lesson podcast.
Tom, thank you for joining us on Geek History Lesson.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. You're one of my favorite fan media dudes. I don't know what to say, but man, I appreciate you going way back.
Thanks, man. Now, I want to talk about the Riddler. Our episode's all about the Riddler. And I want to ask you, as the Batman writer, where do you think Riddler ranks in Batman's rogues gallery? Would you put him near the top or in the middle?
I think he's A-list. I mean, it depends. It depends on how you do it. I think Joker's A+. I feel like Joker stands above the rest as sort of his own list.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the tier below the Joker. So if you kind of Joker's A+, the A-list ones, I think he's in the A-list. He's there with Penguin, Riddler, and maybe Ra's al Ghul. I mean, you know, there's a small list there.
Now, all of Batman's villains, some people say, are part of his psychological makeup. What part of Batman's psyche do you think the Riddler represents?
He's the brains. He's the world's greatest detective. He's the guy who's just as smart as Batman. The Riddler is just as crazy as Batman. The Penguin's just as desperate. And the Riddler's just as smart. Catwoman's just as passionate. And Dr. Freeze is just as obsessed with puns. Mr. Freeze.
Let's talk about the Riddler and his interactions with other villains. Now, you are going into this big arc, the War of Jokes and Riddles. What is it like writing the Riddler interacting with other characters like the Joker?
The Riddler has been the big surprise for me going into this, because everybody knows what the Joker is or what you can be. And you try to find something surprising about him. And I think I found that. And so I was like, okay, I kind of know where I'm going with the Joker. But then I sat down to write the Riddler and I was just surprised at, I don't know the way to say it, but how evil he is. I mean, like how scary he can be and how visceral, like all this stuff I was thinking I would only get from the Joker, I could also find in the Riddler. I was shocked by that. Because I honestly, growing up, the Riddler was not, I mean, I love him and he's some people's favorite character, but to me, he always seemed to sort of be like Joker light. Like, you know, the Joker had mysteries and the Riddler had mysteries. I sort of didn't, if a story came on the original Batman TV show and it was a Riddler episode, I'd be more happy if it was a Joker episode. So I kind of always felt he was a little bit Joker light or Diet Joker or something like that. And then I started writing him and realized that a riddle wasn't a joke, that these were two different things, and that the joke, a joke is chaos. It's the unexpected. Even the simplest joke, you know, why did the chicken cross the road to get to the other side? The funny part about that joke is that you expect it to be a joke, but you give them a straight answer, right? Like that's what makes it funny. And it's unexpected, but a riddle solves a thing. It's a problem. It doesn't, you know, that comes to something. So it's the exact opposite. It's order. It's, you know, there are problems in the world and there are solutions to them. And then I started to realize like, oh, okay. So he's that fascism and the Joker is anarchy. And they're not just, you know, one's crazy and one's a little less crazy. One's obsessed. One's a little less obsessed. They're just polar opposites of the same sort of continuum.
That's interesting. I never thought about the idea that the riddle is a joke that is answered.
Yeah, that's what a riddle is. A riddle. That's why you don't laugh at a riddle. You're always going, huh, well, I guess that solves it. Whereas a joke, you're like, oh, man, I never thought that would be the thing.
So why did you decide to introduce the Riddler into the book now? Can you tell us a little bit about your development process for the next arc, The War of Jokes and Riddles? Why issue 25?
I mean, there's meta answers and there's story answers. So the story answer is probably more interesting, then I'll give you the meta one. So the story answer is that in 24... Batman proposes to Catwoman for a number of reasons that the whole first year has been leading up to, where he's sort of in this emotional moment of his life where he's searching for happiness, searching for something that'll give him joy, and he believes Catwoman's the answer. And before he does that proposal, or before she answers, he says to her, there's one thing you have to know about me. And this is inspired by Tessa d'Urbervilles or every other Victorian novel you've ever read, was like, I have a dark secret in my past. But you think you know me. You know about my parents. You know about the sort of darkness in me. You think you know about everything I've done. That's why we love each other, is because we know everything about each other. But there's one secret I actually have kept from you that goes back in my past that you have to know before you say yes, or else your yes won't mean anything. You have to know that I'm not the man you think I am. And so the War of Jokes and Riddles is sort of his confession to Catwoman. The whole thing is him telling this story. And then she has to decide if what he did still makes him someone she wants to marry. So that's the in-story part of it.
What's the meta reason then?
The meta reason, I think there's two things. Number one, DC is going into this metal crossover event, which is this amazing involving every single character in the DC universe. And Scott Snyder and James Tynan and Greg Capullo are just blowing people's minds. And I don't want people to sort of look at the Batman in that book and be like, oh, that's just, you know, the crisis Batman. That's not the real Batman. Because I love continuity, and I know that feeling of looking at an event and not feeling it's a real event because you're not seeing it in the main book.
In the main book, yeah.
But I also don't want to give you 8 crossover issues. I think people would be a little frustrated for that. I mean, there's a responsibility in the main Batman title to be first of all, be something on the newspaper stand that any kid can pick up and say, oh, I want to follow this one story. And number two, to be the biggest, best story it can be. And so those two things combined, I was like, well, I'll do a story in the past. And that way, the Batman that's happened, the Batman that proposed, the Batman in the present is the Batman that's in Scott Snyder's. That's the continuity. If you're looking for in-continuity Batman, look no farther than the metal event. And if you're looking for the continuation of the story of Batman, you can look to Batman. So it sort of accomplished that thing for me. And it let me tell a great story without breaking continuity.
Where roughly in the Batman past is this like a year one-ish time tale? Or whereabouts does the War of Jokes and Riddle take place?
It takes place a year after the Bat crashes through the window. So year one has happened. 0 year has happened. Batman has sort of established himself. He's had a number of successes. He's fought his entire rogues gallery. He hasn't found Robin yet. I like to say it takes place between between Halloween and Dark Victory in sort of the Loeb Sale universe.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Was there ever any consideration to titling this The Year of Jokes and Riddles so you could get on that year of the year legacy?
This whole thing, you know, it started as like 4 or 5 years ago when I was first breaking into comics. But it was a different editor who's no longer at DC. And I had done a little issue for him, and he sort of said, oh, thanks, but no thanks, kid. But, you know, keep in touch. And my version of keeping in touch was to send him a pitch every single Thursday.
Wow.
And he would, you know, every like fourth one I'd send in once a month, he'd be like, thanks, kid, you know. And this was one of the pitches I sent where I was just like, you know, I was like, Riddler versus Joker. That's obviously something someone's ever done. That's such an obvious idea. And, you know, I checked in the books, like, no one's ever done that. That's so weird. So, and I called it in that document, I called it The War of Jokes and Riddles. And I like that title. So this has the same title that I ghost pitched 5 years ago.
All right. Well, Tom, I also have some questions for you from our patrons over at patreon.com/Jawin. Drew Marks asks, has the idea for a Riddler ever becoming an anti-hero been thrown around? And if so, or if not, do you think that would be an interesting story to tell, like the Riddler as a hero?
If you read the Dini Detective run, which is one of my favorite runs of Batman. Yeah, he does it there, yeah. And you see him sort of trying to reform himself and trying to become Batman. And it's really great. So I would look there to it. I think there's someone could do just a brilliant Riddler series of a bad guy trying to be good and failing, sort of an opposite of Breaking Bad, you know, sort of a Breaking Good. I think that's something to look at, because I think if Batman didn't exist, the Riddler might be a good guy. I think the idea of he has sort of that thing that Lex Luthor has with Superman, where if Superman didn't exist, I think Lex would be okay. Yeah. Where Riddler's kind of like, as long as I'm the smartest guy in the room, I'm cool with myself. But as soon as I'm not the smartest guy in the room, I get insecure and crazy. And I think that's who Riddler is. Like, he just can't deal with the fact that he cannot defeat Batman. I mean, that's what Jokes and Riddles is about, the idea that both Joker and Riddler have come to the conclusion that there's one thing they can't do is defeat Batman.
Sean Craven asks, what do you think the Riddler's desired endgame is, and what would he do with himself afterward if he ever reached it?
I think the Riddler wants to solve the question of what is the meaning of life. I think he wants to solve the ultimate riddle. And if he ever solved that, I think he probably shoot himself in the head.
Whoa.
I think that's, I honestly do. I think that would be the end. I don't think he would be, he'd be like, I solved every single riddle. I know every single thing about everything. I think he put a gun to his head and be like, life has no more meaning. I'm done.
Coming soon from DC. I Am Suicide, the Riddler.
I am Suicide the Riddler. Yeah.
Tom, as a personal question, I want to ask you, what is your favorite thing about writing Batman? What do you really dig about this job?
Honestly, the best thing about Batman, no one's going to believe me when I say this, but it's the fans. I know that sounds like such like an NBA player at the halftime show giving some crappy answer, but I mean, I've written a lot of books that I think are quality, and not a ton of people read them. I don't mind that, but Batman fans, they'll always give you a chance as long as the word Batman is on it. Like I know I'm not writing into a void. I'm writing into a base. I'm writing into people who care about these characters and care passionately, and the stakes are always high for them. And that makes Batman a unique writing experience in comics, the fact that there is this fan base that cares about it. And it's the difference between walking on the ground and walking on a high wire. And when I write, I like walking on a high wire. That's the best way to write, is to write under pressure. So the fans putting the pressure on you, that's what makes it the best book in comics to write.
Would you say the hardest thing about writing Batman is living up to that legacy, living up to that base?
No, the hardest thing about writing Batman is what hasn't been done. No, there's two hard things about writing Batman. Number one, what hasn't been done. And number two, you read Frank Miller and realize you can't write better than that.
How do you deal with that? What is your development process? Like, how do you come up with ideas for Batman that have never been done?
I mean, there was literally a late night at Baltimore Comic Con, I think a year or two ago, Scott and I, you know, had a bottle of whiskey and no cups, just going back and forth, throwing ideas out, you know, has Batman ever been turned into a monster? Yeah, Batman's been turned into a monster. Or who hasn't worn the cowl? Has Alfred worn the cowl? Yeah, Alfred's been in the cowl. You know, like going, like trying to throw the craziest things out there. I mean, the way I finally made peace with it, and it took me a while to sort of get my heads, is the one thing that I can bring to Batman that no one else can bring is myself. And that sounds stupid and arrogant, but it's all I have. And that if I can write Batman in an emotional way that I don't think other people can write it. And so what I go for is stuff in the emotions that haven't been explored before. Mm-hmm. And then I try to ignore the fact that Frank Miller would have done it better.
Well, that's probably good advice for anybody that in the future wants to write Batman. Tom, please tell our listeners where they can find you online, and also what are some of the books you got coming out that they can check out?
The best place to find me is Twitter. I'm Tom King, TK, just my name and my initials. And I got Batman 25. It's oversized. It's the War of Jokes and Riddles Part 1 of 8. Comes out this week. And I hope you pick it up. I hope you love it. For all you original Batman fans, there's a little joke and riddle inside there. There's a puzzle to solve. There are two images that have references, and I want to see if people see what they're from.
Interesting.
So I want to see who gets them.
All right, everybody, you have a challenge out there. Tom King has designed a riddle. Let's see if you can beat his mind.
And for fans of comics, I have a new series coming out from Mitch and I, who did a bunch of Batman issues with me, who did the Rooftops and the Swamp Thing issue. We're following up that with this Mr. Miracle series that comes out in August. And I think it's the best thing I've ever written. So look out for that.
Yeah, Mitch Garrett's art is amazing. And I have got a chance to read it. Somebody inside DC slipped me a copy of issue number one. And I thought it was amazing. I think it is probably the best thing you guys have ever made together. It's pretty amazing.
Woohoo!
So there you go. All right, thanks for joining us today on Geek History Lesson, Tom.
My pleasure, man. Those are great questions. I love talking Riddler. That's awesome.
And that was an awesome Riddler-tastic discussion with writer Tom King. Go pick up his book. Batman 25 is soon to come out. It starts the War of Jokes and Riddles, and it's an eight-part storyline. Mm-hmm. Joker versus Riddler. How can you not want to read that?
You can't.
I have a feeling if we ever redo the Riddler podcast or redo a Riddler Part 2, that storyline is probably going to be on there.
I don't see how it couldn't be.
There you go. All right, so let's move into the next section of our podcast, the teaching tweet.
Ooh.
Where Ashley, in 140 characters or less, will tell you, basically sum up the Riddler for you.
Riddle me this. What's green and purple, and what of Ashley's favorite Batman villains? #TheRiddler. And then the little emoticon pops up.
Oh,
I didn't know
the Riddler was one of your favorites.
I wish. He is one of my favorite Batman villains, but I feel like as an intellectual exercise more than in practice.
Yeah.
I think he's had more not great stories than truly great stories, but
agreed.
I love the idea of a villain who could match Batman intellectually.
Nice.
So there you go.
All right. So we're going to move into a brand new section of the podcast, The Honor Roll.
Yes.
And this is a section of the podcast that... where, Ashley, do you want to explain it?
Yeah. Okay. It's for our lovely students who leave us 5-star ratings on iTunes. So if you do that, we'll give you a shout out and we'll make you a part of the honor roll.
Yeah.
It'll be an ongoing list. So this week, we have a review from a user named Datalore, cool name, and they wrote, love it.
See, thank you, Datalore. They're obviously a Star Trek TNG fan.
Yes.
Data and lore.
Oh, I get it now.
There's also actually a name. There is an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation called Datalore.
Well, they have great taste on two fronts.
They do.
Obviously. And they understand that brevity is the soul of wit, so they belong on the honor roll.
So head on over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review if you want to join the honor roll. And that's it for Geek History Lesson. As always, you can download this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher. Now you can listen to it on Spotify.
What?
It's pretty sweet. And Ashley, if they want to suggest more not-so-good Batman villains, where can they do that?
You can suggest all of the Batman villain lessons to us at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, and tweet at us at @GHLpodcast. There's a ton of ways to contact us in all of those places.
You can also tweet at us personally. For me, it's at Jawin, Jawiin. And for Ashley, it's at Ashley V. Robinson. And
yes.
Also, don't forget to head over to patreon.com/Jawin if you want to listen to Geek History Lesson Extras, a little bit more of Geek History Lesson. Ashley, what's today's subject?
We are going to go through some of Riddler's best Golden Age riddles.
And we're going to see if we can solve them?
We're going to see if you can solve them.
Oh, I'm going to be so bad. It's going to be terrible. I'm going to be so stupid.
It's going to be amazing.
I'm
so excited.
Me no think good.
Oh,
okay.
Do it as Bizarro. It'll be great.
Me no not understand.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun time. You're definitely going to
want
to check it out.
Me want to not punch you in face.
That's right.
All right. For Geek History Lesson, I am Jason Green Leotard Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And Professor Ashley, before we go real quick, we should thank our TAs.
We should definitely thank our TAs.
Because they were super awesome.
Thank you so much for requesting the Riddler and being so patient. Patrick McMillan and Josh Pinto, you rock.
Do you think they could solve riddles?
Well, I know one of them personally, and I think he probably could.
All right. Well,
and I'm going to assume that the other one, again, with such good taste, could probably tackle
this. Well, that's all we need to know. Professor Ashley, after giving us this clue-tastic, amazing episode, please close out this Geek History Lesson episode.
Class is now dismissed.